Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with the Reason Podcast. Today, we're talking with Catherine Mangu Ward. She's the editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine. And we're also talking with a former Reasoner, Dave Weigel, who is a Washington Post political reporter who is calling in from El Paso, Texas, in the last days of the 2016 election. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, Dave, you have a piece up recently. You know, we're less than a week out from the election, and you have a piece up at the Post about what went wrong with Gary Johnson. And you talked to Gary, the Libertarian Party candidate, who said, hey, you know what, actually, it's all coming up roses here. You talked to a bunch of libertarians, including myself, saying, like, yeah, you know, is this a missed opportunity or not? What did you find, and how convincing is Gary Johnson's optimism that his campaign has been an overwhelming success, to your mind?
Well, some people I talked to but didn't end up quoting were libertarian candidates for our local office, a couple in D.C., and they think he actually did fine if you grade on the curve that he's going to do better than any libertarian ever. Like, there was a dream of him, like a crazy dream of him
right.
winning. There was a second-order dream of him maybe getting 10-15%, maybe winning a state. And since neither of those are happening, the idea of him getting like 4% is not bad for them. I mean,
right.
he might do well enough in some states to get them ballot access next time. If you look at it, it's a building year. Mm-hmm. Libertarian Party, capital L, people are pretty happy.
Yeah.
But what I focused on was that there was an idea first put forward by Rand Paul and then by Gary that libertarianism defined in some way was going to be the philosophy of the election. And Democrats believed that to an extent. There was a real thinking here that was going to be the thing that expanded the appeal of the party. And I was focused on why that didn't happen.
Mm. Why do you think that didn't happen?
Well, negative polarization is part of it. Mm. It didn't matter what the Republican and Democratic Party believe in. People feel like they need to vote for them to stop 90 to 100% of bad things they know will happen if the other party
mm-hmm.
wins. So that was always going to happen. I think there was a hope that maybe because the candidates were so unpopular, there'd be less
right.
of it. But and I think what we learned with Trump is that his trade philosophy and his let old people have all their Social Security, let's not change anything, let's make America like it
right.
was. That was more popular than libertarianism as it's been put forward by CEI and Cato and,
yeah.
and Reason. I'm just convinced of that. I mean, I talked to some people who were a little bit more optimistic than this, but, you know, Brian
mm-hmm.
Doherty, who also works at Reason, who wrote The History of Libertarianism, he reflected on something I've been thinking about, which is that, well, let me put it in a way I heard a liberal friend put it. Rand Paul took Ron Paul's message and ditched the racism.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump ditch Ron Paul's message and kept the racism, and which one did better? And that's the super cynical way of looking at it. Like, it turns out the thing that everyone thought was holding Ron Paul back actually has more political appeal at a time when, like, the big untapped electorate was white people who want the country to be like it was. And the millennials who want the country to change, who see it changing, they just split their vote and didn't vote and didn't get involved. They got outnumbered. It turned out if you're outnumbered, you're less relevant.
Yeah. Catherine, what do you think about, I think what Dave has put forward there is really interesting and fascinating, particularly looking at the legacy of Ron Paul, who I was traveling the past week. I remain amazed at how many people, when I started at Reason in 93, virtually everybody who was a libertarian, they would name, excuse me, I came in here through Ayn Rand, through Robert Heinlein, through Milton Friedman, and then maybe through Friedman I found Hayek or something like that. Now 90% of the people I talk to are like, I became a libertarian during the 2007-2008 period because of Ron Paul. Do you see that kind of that these are the two legacies of Ron Paul, the kind of white populism and nationalism or the kind of sunny, upbeat libertarianism, which I also ran into a bunch of people, Catherine, who assumed that that was going to be the focus of your iteration of Reason Magazine?
Well, I think it will be, although it's not heartening to hear that there's no constituency
yeah.
for that. I mean, I think so. I would actually say we're already in the post Ron Paul libertarian recruitment era. And my sample is people who are interviewing for internships at
mm-hmm.
Reason. Right. And I absolutely agree. It was like kids who read Rand and Hayek. Then it was kids who encountered Ron Paul. And, you know, these are not secret racists.
No,
right?
Not
like,
at all. Yeah.
I absolutely agree that there was a portion of Ron Paul support that that did go to Trump on the token of, you know, white privilege, for lack of a less millennial term. But we're now sort of back to these philosophical libertarians who maybe are also remnant types. You know, maybe they're saying, the best we can do is a small percentage, but let's keep the flame alive. That isn't the Johnson Wells message, right, though. And I think that's where the disappointment has sort of turned up. Also, though, the two of them on the trail, I think particularly in these last weeks, have this strange tone of entitlement. Like, hey, these other two candidates are terrible. We deserve your vote. And at the same time, they're sort of shellacking the major parties for their sense of entitlement.
Right.
And I think that's like a weird juxtaposition that I don't love to hear from them, and I don't think makes a lot of sense.
I am interested, Dave, in hearing about the LP people down the ballot a little bit, who you seem to say were more kindly disposed towards Johnson. Because I went to a bunch of kind of local events and things like that, and it does seem to me, you know, all of the dreams of, you know, getting into the debates, having some kind of, you know, weird scenario where things get kicked to the House of Representatives, the great libertarian dream of living in a world without construction sounds, which I guess actually you're in the libertarian world, isn't that the whole thing? Is that
we're always building.
Yeah, and it's not a mistake that you're on the border between Mexico and the U.S. I mean, maybe are they building the wall, or are they tearing it down, or building a new drug tunnel, maybe? But
this is I love to joke about that. The unfunny truth is they're building this in-town trolley system because El Paso's booming, and they're all panicked about what'll happen if people stop. Stop trading with Mexico.
Yeah. Is part of what the LP is going through here, because I'm still favorably disposed, certainly, to Gary Johnson and even Bill Weld. I plan on writing a defense of him later because I think he brought a lot to the ticket, and our colleague Matt Welch has already sketched some of this out. But is it that the LP actually decided to run two politicians this time around, which meant they got a lot more publicity, which meant that they actually were taken more seriously than usual, even if it also means that they're kind of disappointing on some key issues that people of a more pure, or who are expecting purity in partisan politics, would can really kind of stomach?
Well, that was what people debated at the the Libertarian Convention in Memorial Day weekend. Johnson had to overcome this 47%, closer to 49% for Weld, part of the party that said, this is the year of the outsider, so we need a non-politician. And it just, the conversation would have been totally different had the LP nominated, like, the CEO of Overstock.com or Fred Smith of FedEx. This might have been, not that those guys were up for it, this might have been the year to do that instead. But that didn't happen. Yep. So what you had was the libertarians running as competent managers of the government and trying to mainstream, so that when you hear a libertarian party, you think, oh, yeah, well, they seem to run things okay. And that's new. That's really never how the party was branded before. You always have to go back and cast what that image was. Even the Ron Paul image was not, here is somebody who runs the government. It is, here's a protest vote. Here's a blow up the system, blow up the Fed vote. So it will turn out. Like, I was trying to be careful with the article, mostly exploring whether libertarianism was popular or not. Gary Johnson failed us by not winning the election. Johnson will end up getting returning the Libertarian Party to not just the biggest third party, but one that's going to have conversions in some states. And I talked to state legislators who were Republican and bailed because of Trump. That might continue to happen. I mean, that's something I'm already kind of casting forward to. Especially if Trump wins, there's going to be there are Republicans who never thought that would happen, who are going to be asked to do things they never wanted to do. So and if he doesn't win, there's going to be a fight within the Republican Party. Maybe there are places where the people who got into politics for reasons of free trade and leaving you alone are not inclined to stay inside the party of kicking out all the immigrants. So there, I think Johnson did set it up for opportunities in the future. That's all different than the question of whether libertarianism is going to be the philosophy that, like, the great middle of the country glommed onto, or that the Republican Party adopted and thereby won you know, one Illinois and one the dream of Rand Paul when he was getting all the magazine covers. Mm-hmm. That dream, I just think, was belied by the what happened with voters. They just didn't like those ideas.
Yeah, Catherine, do you? We I know at Reason, especially, we were all thrilled when we heard Rand Paul talking about how the Republican Party had become stale and moss covered. And that it really needed to change. And it seemed like he was trying to move the party towards a more libertarian perspective. Do you think, and how much of it depends on whether or not Trump wins or not, but is the Republican Party, is there the, you know, there's the Trump faction kind of, but then is the opposite of that, is it a kind of Rand Paul vision or is it more of a Paul Ryan vision where he's, you know, it doesn't, I don't even know where Paul Ryan is going now, other than being kind of an accommodationist of the status quo. He wants to save Medicare. He wants to save Social Security, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, is there a libertarian strain in the Republican Party that might reassert itself after this election, or is it going to have to look elsewhere?
Sure. I think it's still there. And I guess I take heart from the fact that an awful lot of people at the beginning of this cycle thought that it was not a crazy version of the future where that libertarian strain was dominant in the Republican race. I mean, it didn't turn out that way, but I guess I wouldn't be incredibly determinist about Trump's victory. I think it was a weird year. You know, if there's one thing that everyone can agree on, it's that 2016 was a weird freaking year and weird things happened. But I am not yet ready to give up on the idea that there is kind of an alternate history that we could see happening in some other variation in the future where it's not fair exactly to lump them together, but I'm going to go ahead and do it where the kind of Rand Paul, Paul Ryan, Jeff Flakey version of the party, maybe that isn't the 45% in the middle of the population. Mm-hmm. Maybe that isn't the moderate view, but there's no reason it can't be the intellectually dominant thread in an otherwise pragmatic Republican party. And it isn't right now because of the weirdness of Trump, but I don't think that means it never will be.
Dave, do you think, and this is something, I think it was already underway while you were working at Reason as a Cub reporter 600 or 700 years ago. But, you know, the idea, and this is, you know, infused in the Johnson Weld kind of discourse that, you know, most people are kind of socially tolerant and they're fiscally responsible. And, then the problem becomes when you try to translate that into specific policy positions. But do you think that's right? And is the country in a broad way is libertarian? In that it seems as if polls, you know, regularly show that people care less about once divisive moral issues, you know, things like pot legalization. There are broad pluralities, if not big majorities, for things like free trade, for immigration, for less business regulation. Is the country broadly libertarian and it just doesn't understand that? Or is it that once you start to narrow it down and say, okay, well, I'm for free trade, and by the way, that means you losing your protective tariff or your tax subsidy, and then all of that stuff goes out the window?
That's a good question. I think that's where you get to the critique of Gary Johnson as Gary Johnson, that he really didn't put in the homework to play in the major leagues. God, those are two. Sorry for
that. Jesus.
We all. He didn't do the spring training.
They pay you to write?
He didn't do the spring training necessary to, like, throw the football into the cricket wicket. Johnson's like a very low-key guy who thinks fixing the government's pretty simple. And kept getting caught, not even by hard gotcha questions, but two of the most embarrassing questions were, one, name a foreign leader you admire, two, economists say your tax plan sucks, why doesn't it? And I've talked to him probably as much as any reporter in the last 4 years, and I talked to him after both his interviews, and he had something ready, kind of. Mm-hmm. But I both those times, and you know people at Reason and people in the circles of D.C. who could have taken those questions and answered them easily.
Right.
You could have said, oh, well, you know, Estonians, or they got to figure it out. You could have said with the tax plan, well, here's what happened when the consumption tax has been tested by these economists, and here's Jeff Myron's explanation. Like, there's a way to sell that stuff that he just didn't do. And so that is, I feel, when people argue that libertarianism didn't fail, it was failed. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to say that. The problem is that Rand Paul was pretty good at articulating that stuff and had really well-reviewed debate performances, including by me. Yeah. There were several times I thought, well, the story of this debate is going to be that Rand Paul came back and knew what was going on, and it wasn't. It was Chris Christie said 9/11 really loud, and that was what people remembered instead of Paul articulating this foreign policy. So I keep going back and forth. I think in the idealized world where a libertarian candidate was making this critique about Hillary Clinton's foreign policy and making this critique of health care, maybe it was popular, but we had these like various imperfect tests where it just wasn't.
Catherine, what do you think about Rand Paul as a kind of a vessel of libertarian ideas? Because on the one hand, he's great, and I hesitate to say that he is descended from good genes in this case, because I think, well, I guess it depends on what kind of libertarian you are, right? Whether you believe in extreme genetic determinism or it's more loosed up. But I mean, being the son of Ron Paul, and he knows these ideas in and out, but then he always strikes me, because he is socially conservative, that it's, and it's not even that these things are necessarily opposed, but it's like he can be written off by people as kind of socially intolerant, or, you know, he's super anti-abortion. So that puts him in a right-wing category that libertarians, you know, and a lot of libertarians are anti-abortion, but more are pro-choice. But is Rand Paul the guy to carry forward as a kind of spokesman for political libertarianism within the Republican Party, or is he, like Gary Johnson, not the right salesman?
I mean, as a purple-haired quasi-millennial urban libertarian, I want my variant to be the thing that people want. But I think that the initial Republican debates, where I think at one point Rand Paul literally waved a pocket constitution, that was probably the high point of his candidacy, was these moments when he would get up on his high horse and say, if the Fourth Amendment doesn't mean anything, then what the hell are we doing here? That's what people liked about him. That's not what I like about libertarianism, and that's not what people are banking on millennials liking about libertarianism. But maybe we're wrong about what millennials will like about libertarianism.
We each get a third of this idea, which is $1 million idea. Let's put the Constitution on Snapchat. And the next thing you know, we're winning.
But this is exactly the kind of thing that old school Libertarian Party would do, right? They would actually be like, oh, we just need to get more people to read the Constitution. And that is not right. That's not the way that Johnson Weld ran their campaign. But I think the variant that I would like to see, and that I think people are sort of conjuring in their think pieces about the future of the Libertarian Party, is something where no one raises any eyebrows about whether the Libertarian Party candidate is racist or sexist or, has any kind of like question mark on their social views, so as to then smuggle in the unpopular idea that there must be such a thing as financial trade-offs in the federal budget.
I'm not sure you answered the question. So that's no on Rand Paul?
No on Rand Paul, but only because of my own fantasy about what Libertarian Party could look like, not because of anything that's actually in poll numbers that shows that that's what people don't want.
Dave, as somebody who's been, on the trail, you're still on the trail, and I am going to start circulating the rumor that you're moving to Mexico if Hillary gets elected, along with David Crosby, because he never knows which direction he's actually running from the law.
All the sweet jobs that Hillary's going to export to Mexico. Yeah, I want one of those.
If you can make it down to Brazil, you'll never have to work again. Didn't she promise all the Brazilian bankers like million-dollar birthday checks? Is there a lot of action that you've seen on like the down ballot? Like, does anybody, there is the Hillary and Trump at the top, and this is, Mothra versus Godzilla. Is anybody saying this is going to affect lower level races? Sometimes you hear people saying like nobody can come back from having Trump as the presidential candidate. But is it kind of like the presidential election is very different from what's happening at other levels of votes?
Well, this has been one of the more depressing things about the race, frankly. And it, Rand Paul brought this up often, kind of to my annoyance. I would get him to self-reflect, and no politician likes to answer a question about why they didn't catch on. Mm-hmm. But I try to see, like, hey, how come nobody noticed this? Why didn't this take off? And his answer was always, well, when one candidate is on cable news all the time and they play every speech and we all have to react to him, we're not talking about anything else. And I actually think that's been a really potent part of this, that there, I've covered a bunch of down ballot races and struggled sometimes more than other years because people are not really aware of what's going on. All of the local coverage is about whether Trump or Hillary will win the election. So people are, and I should add, no, we've gone the whole time, I think, without mentioning that one of the holy grails of libertarianism is just, you're probably going to be delivered on election day, which is California looking extremely likely to legalize medical marijuana, or sorry, legalize marijuana, period. I think it's like a 20-point poll lead now. No one's even running against it. So, like, that stuff's happening, but when it comes to candidates expressing, like, a libertarian view of things, just people haven't been paying attention to that in a way that I don't want to, like, whine about how the election should be about what I wanted to cover, but I didn't want to cover just, like, respond to this horrible gaffe the whole year. I thought there would be more of a debate. And that's the thing about a Rand, even more than a Johnson, he really thought if this was about the fundamentals of the tax code and what America should be like as a world power, then we would have a different election.
Well, and like we just didn't. Maybe that'll still come. I also think with Rand, it was partly he might have gone into this a little too soon. You know, part of the thing that I find distasteful about Trump beyond everything else is the arrogance or the sense that he can just walk in and take, you know, he'll be great at anything because he's, you know, he's great at whatever he does. He's like an A student who mistakes good grades for, you know, universal genius or something like that. And I think Rand Paul is actually going to be a really effective senator, and he already has. And I know for me, one of the great high water marks of in my memories in politics was the filibuster that he ran over, over surveillance programs. And, you know, I can saw him sitting at the same desk where I was following that on Twitter and watching it on TV. And it was one of those moments where it was like, thank God there's a guy up there who's taken seriously some of the stuff that's written in that Constitution that the millennials won't read because they're too busy, you know, wearing their baseball caps backwards. Although I guess that's Gen X, right? Catherine, millennials wear flat caps forward all the time. It's very disturbing. Catherine, do you, when you look, one of the things we do every 4 years at Reason is we have our staff, or we invite them to say who they're voting for and why, and a couple of other things, as well as people in our universe. That's in the current issue, or the next issue, or I'm sorry, I mean, it's in at Reason. What were there any surprises in there when you compare it to, previous polls of who people were rooting for in the presidential election?
It was a little bit surprising to me, I guess, how hard it was for us to find anyone who was voting major party. We really had to work for it to find people in our universe who were willing to go on the record saying Trump or Clinton. And that hasn't been true in the past. Mm-hmm. There have always been some sort of pragmatists. As a non-voter, as a sort of ethical non-voter, God forgive me, I always judge the success of those things by how many people just say, I'm not going to vote at all. And that number was relatively stable, slightly down. But I think that's telling, right? The idea that even in a year when the Libertarian Party really did field these very serious candidates, they're doing much better among the general population than past libertarians, even if not as well as their wildest dreams. Quote unquote, actual libertarians, people in the Reason universe, weren't as taken with the Johnson Weld ticket. And that's, you know, that's of course something that's been debated endlessly, this idea of purity versus pragmatism in the party. But we are a great little study at Reason in, I like those guys. They seem good, but, you know, are they really going to burn it all down? Are they really going to implement the particular reform I want to see? And partially, I think, because Johnson is so vague about policy and so blurry on the details, he didn't get the nerds excited. He certainly didn't get the Reason nerds excited.
What is it a good thing that, and I recently was in a debate with Walter Block, who is a Loyola university economist in New Orleans, and he writes a lot at lourockwell.com, and it's very much coming out of the Ron Paul kind of machine infused by Murray Rothbard and whatnot. He has put forth this idea. He created a group called Libertarians for Trump, where if you're in a purple right. state, you know, vote for Trump because it would be better for Hillary. Is it a good thing that that didn't catch on among libertarians, do we think?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think – what would libertarianism mean at all if it endorsed a strongman promising to fix every problem by personally intervening and bullying people into breaking their agreements? Like, it just – it's – he's antithetical. And I wonder how this election would have gone if there was just a – if Martin O'Malley had lit children's hearts on fire and there was a generic Democrat. I'm not sure it would have been that different. But I think there would have been less of a temptation for any libertarian to think that. If it was a choice between bland, let's continue the Obama administration, mm-hmm. let's sign trade deals, Democrat versus our American totalitarian experiment, that would have been pretty easy. I think it was just the record of Hillary Clinton that got anyone thinking that way. And it's definitely good that it didn't catch on. I mean, if libertarianism means anything, it can't mean
right.
this. And there has to be, like, Rand has disappeared. I'm kind of trying to talk to him before the election. I should say, sidebar.
Sure.
One reason I wrote this piece is I just noticed the media, which I'm part of, kind of more than ever, the mainstream media felt kind of gypped by spending all this time on Rand and Johnson and then not taking off. So at the moment, I think they've got less of a voice in our political process than normal.
Oh, so this is you're mad. You're mad at them because they disappointed you.
I'm not. Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I'm kind of pitching. Let me. It used to be I have an exclusive with Rand Paul. But let's put it on the front page. And now it's, hey, Rand Paul wants to talk. Who cares? And I'm kind of trying. I'm interested in what he says. Trying to talk to him before the election. Maybe I'll run it after. Because there will be Justin Amashes, the Tom
right.
Masseys, et cetera, are going to be around and have kind of laid low in this whole process. I mean, that's one thing. The really anti-Trump libertarians I know have been disappointed in Rand. He just said, yeah, you know, we got to elect the Republican, stop Clinton. His idea of incrementalism through electing Trump is not allowing libertarianism to be part of the debate at all. And I'll see if that changes. I mean, I'll see if he it's so much of it depends. If it looks like this was a winnable election and appealing to white men at the exclusion of everyone else blew it, then I think people like Rand are going to come back and make a statement, but they didn't. I mean, like, the most critical voice of Trump in the last 6 months in the GOP was Mike Lee from Utah,
yep.
who's, I think, got a lot to offer libertarians, but
he's not
not trying to change the party in that direction.
Well,
he's not a libertarian.
And,
he's a strict constructionist, like he's a Scalia.
And I think that there's a lot there, too, that libertarians will find interesting and can sign up for. But, yeah, it's. I mean, he and Rand Paul are kind of on, there's a dividing line there somehow. Jeff Flake, of course, has also recently come out and said that he might vote for Evan McMullen in Arizona, which is frustrating. You know, why not Gary Johnson, who's, I think, a more serious candidate and probably closer
yeah.
in line?
I mean, I'm talking to Flake tomorrow, and I'd kind of like to tease that out because this would be the year. And there are a couple of members of Congress who are voting for Johnson
yep.
for articulated
but it's
libertarian
also,
reasons.
But I think the Liberty Caucus guys in general and this sort of cluster – I thought I was pretty cynical about partisan mm-hmm. politics, but I am once again disappointed by how many people essentially said, well, OK, but in the end, I just got to go with my, whether there's an R or a D next to my name. And I expect the American people to understand and forgive that. That happened more than I thought it was going to happen. I really believed, perhaps foolishly, that more than just, Mike Lee in
yep.
Utah saying, I'm thinking about getting a McMuffin was gonna yep. I believe that we will look back later on this election, particularly assuming Trump doesn't win, and say, hey, why didn't more of these guys at least say no comment?
Yep.
They didn't have to go so far as to say I'm grudging
and
really
that
they could have said I'm not
that
saying.
Jason Chaffetz, another Utah congressman, I think really set the bar like way down at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean when he attacked Trump and rescinded his endorsement and then was like, oh, yeah, but I'm voting for Trump because he's better than Hillary. Like, and he went on a big thing about he's got daughters, so there's no way he can endorse Trump. But, yeah, sure, I'm going to vote for him anyway.
That was, to me, there are a million amazing stories, but the final 2 weeks of this campaign, but the guys who are re-ratting, I think in Churchill's term, I still can't believe that. Just how you wake up and deal with yourself if you never are going to vote for the guy. But, well, I guess the re-rats are the guys who said, sure, like Chaffetz, yeah, like Joe Heck, like I think about half of the guys who did this, then said, well, you know, is calling for mass bigotry against a billion Muslims and hundreds of millions of Mexicans. That was fine, but he talked about grabbing somebody's vagina, so no. And then said, well, he talked about grabbing somebody's vagina, but at least his email server protocols are A-OK. Like, just those guys are kind of added to what was already a rock bottom cynicism.
Well, can we process, like, that can was, we say then that, the that like, this and, yeah, this is finally America has truly lost its innocence with this election, with the last 2 weeks?
I think we can always get worse.
I mean, this our innocence keeps getting sewn up and ready for a new busting. Well, let me take us out of this wonderful conversation with Dave Weigel of the Washington Post, Late of Reason, which is really where he learned everything about life, love.
I learned how a phone works. So there are nine numbers usually when you're dialing a phone number.
And that's basically all you have to do as a reporter, right? So,
just call whoever, you know.
Random dials. But with Dave Weigel and Catherine Mangaward, the editor-in-chief of the print magazine of Reason, let's have a couple of predictions here. First off, is what do you think Gary Johnson, the Johnson Well ticket, will they? What's the final percentage of the popular vote they get?
I'll go first, I guess. I think I'm going to say like 3.5 to 4%, like a Ralph Nader margin.
Okay, Catherine, what about you?
I'm on the record at 3, and I'm going to hold strong.
Okay, I'm going that he's going to get 5.1%, and that 1%, that's like the red wheelbarrow for William Carlos Williams. So much depends on that 0.1%. What about the big enchilada, the White House? Dave, you go first. Is it Hillary or Trump? And what's does the winner get 50% of the vote?
I think it's Hillary. She doesn't get 50%. My North Star is still, it seems like 60-some percent of the country has decided Trump can't possibly be president. Mm-hmm. And they're divided in the right, they're in the right states for her. So unless there's a huge, you know, collapse to Jill Stein or something, I think it's President Hillary, but she gets like 48%.
Okay. Catherine, what about you?
I agree, but also have tremendously enjoyed the Washington press corps' utter lack of confidence in their own ability to answer this question this cycle.
Yeah.
Just every single time that this question is raised, you now see this little flash of terror in everyone's eyes because they've been so wrong so many times. Yeah. So
I stopped doing it after a while, but I used to just kind of randomly tweet the headline, "Hey, media, stop freaking out about Donald Trump's poll numbers," that Nate Silver wrote like right before Trump won the nomination.
Reminder, like we know nothing.
And like I'm in the media, right? But there's part of me that would say just the total destruction of every expert in America. The fact that every newspaper, almost every newspaper endorsed her, every elite endorsed her. I think that we have elites for a reason. And one thing they can do is say, hey, don't elect this guy who might destroy the country. But I think if a reporter is honest, he will say, well, that kind of, I would say that's. In a way, it's kind of the story that a reporter covering politics was meant to write. But it's in the same way that like Joan Didion was meant to write the story of her husband and daughter dying in front of her.
She really was the
story, but I don't think
she really benefited from that. There's no question about that.
I'm saying
I went dark it is and Weigel just went darker. That was good.
That's
an amazing
my life.
Story that you don't want to
my
write.
Life is just like life hasn't served me up that good of material because nobody could have ruined that. I'm going to go with, I think Hillary's going to win with 48% of the vote and Trump will crack 40. I'm really worried about a Hillary presidency. I mean, I must say that it's weird because people look at the insanity of Trump, or the unbalanced nature, which I think is a real problem, but Hillary is going to be bad, right? I mean, and does anybody on this call think she's going to, like, that this is a new dynasty, or is she going to be one and out, assuming she wins?
I mean, this is the greatest disservice that Trump has done us, is that we really haven't been able to adequately focus on the awfulness of Hillary. Yeah. Any other candidate from the GOP, we all could have like buckled down to quantify the awfulness in so many ways. And that's happened, but always with the kind of, yeah, but what about this guy over here? Once she's president, we won't have Trump to contrast. So I guess we can dig in then. You got to vote for the bill to find out what's in it.
It's going to be a buffet, a groaning table of delectable things to start talking about. Well, I want to leave it there. This has been the Reason Podcast. Please listen to us at Reason.com. Go to subscribe and rate and review us at iTunes. Check us out on SoundCloud, and you can also we have various RSS feeds that you can pick up at Reason.com. I want to thank Dave Weigel of The Washington Post, who's called in from apparently some kind of sound lab in El Paso. Dave, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of Western civilization as we know it.
Thanks. I'm going to finish my ambient instrumental piece and then reveal it after the election.
Okay. It's the Newtopian national anthem. Oh, and Dave, by the way, before you go, you have a book coming out on progressive rock. What's the status of that?
It's being copy edited. Frankly,
too many umlauts and bizarre spellings of band names.
It's a lot of just checking that this is indeed the page number that something. Yes. I said what happened on this is indeed right. The chord sequence and that kind of stuff. And it would have been done 2 weeks ago. There is a part of me, if Hillary Clinton does win the election, there'll be a part of me that's very bitter. She didn't just blow it out 2 weeks ago. So I could have said, all right, I'm gone for a week and I would have finished it. But it's coming out next summer.
Okay, and
it's good. The art's in.
Do you have a title for it or what is the one word? And I'm sorry to continue this, but it's progressive rock. We have to talk about it.
We're moving into the third movement of it.
What is your what is the working title, or what's the one sentence summary of it?
The title is the show that never ends. Mm.
It's an ELP
reference. Plus, it goes lots of directions.
I wish you it. Why not calling it like brain salad? Brain salad plastic surgery or something like that, or TARC. Well, never. We will talk forever about progressive rock. Dave Weigel of the Washington Post, thanks so much. Catherine Menge Ward of Reason
Thank
Magazine,
you.
What is the big, what's the next big play for Reason Magazine on the next issue's cover?
I think we're just going to cover progressive rock from now on.
Right,
we're done.
You know, that's where we can be free. Or at least, I mean, not so much if you're a woman, but if you're a man, you can be free in the progressive rock world in the disintegrating floating islands of Roger Dean Jess covers. That's the real America.
I've interviewed Roger Dean so many times this year.
We'll get back to that. And I know you have some great Roger Dean stories, but we're going to save that for a future podcast. Again, thank you, Dave Weigel of The Washington Post. Thank you, Catherine Menge Ward of Reason Magazine. This has been the Reason Podcast, and we're going to be taken out with what we call El Paso Symphony, work in progress by Dave Weigel. Thanks so much.